Imagine for a second, right, that you have this entire army of financial analysts just sitting at your fingertips.
Oh, that's the dream, right?
Right. I mean, we are talking about a legion of tireless, brilliant researchers. They can gather millions of data points, build these incredibly complex multivariable financial models in like seconds.
And they don't need coffee breaks.
Exactly. No coffee breaks, no weekends off. They just rigorously stress test every single one of your investing ideas. It sounds like the ultimate competitive advantage for you.
It really does. But, you know, there's this fascinating, honestly kind of terrifying paradox hidden in that setup.
Yeah.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, when all that data is compiled and the models are perfectly balanced and the stress tests are done, that entire army of analysts just sort of turns and stares at you in total silence.
Because you still have to make the call.
Exactly. You and only you have to make the final high-stakes decision. The ultimate bottleneck in any complex system today, it's not gathering information anymore.
Right, we've basically solved that part.
Yeah, we have. The bottleneck is human judgment. I mean, you can have the most powerful AI agents in the world crunching the numbers, but if you don't know how to direct them, or interpret what they find without letting your own biases take over, that computational power is basically useless.
And that is exactly what we are unpacking today. Welcome to the Deep Dive. For this deep dive, we're looking at a huge stack of notes and frameworks sourced straight from Chapter 9 of the AI Native Investor curriculum.
Which is such a great chapter.
It really is. And this isn't just, you know, the theoretical reading assignment. It's framed as a capstone workshop. It takes all these isolated investing skills, like reading financial statements, valuation modeling, risk analysis, and it collapses them into one end-to-end AI-assisted workflow.
Right.
And the mission for you, the listener, is super specific here. You have to analyze three companies and make one decision. You either buy one, you skip all three, or you mark one for a revisit.
And structuring the workflow that way, I mean, it addresses this massive flaw in how financial analysis is usually taught.
How so?
Well, usually people learn investment analysis as like these independent silos. You know, you take a class on reading balance sheets,
Right.
then later you take a separate class on building a discounted cash flow model. But mistakes rarely happen when you're just looking at data in isolation.
So where do they happen?
The fatal errors almost always happen in the connective tissue, like when you move from verifying the raw data to actually projecting the valuation, or moving from the valuation model to forming your core thesis.
So that's where the assumptions just kind of slip through the cracks.
Exactly. And I think it's important to point out the goal of this deep dive isn't to force you into a stock pick.
Right. A lot of people think, oh, I did all this research. I have to buy something now.
Yeah, but skip is a completely valid, highly strategic position. The actual output of this whole exercise isn't a ticker symbol. It's a defensible stance where you know exactly why you're right and under what specific conditions you'd be wrong.
I love that. Skip is definitely not a consolation prize. It just means your capital stays safe, you know, until the market actually presents something that clears your hurdle rate.
Exactly.
But okay, before you can unleash this AI army on a bunch of financial data, you have to know where to aim them. You can't just tell an AI, hey, go find me a good stock.
Right, that never works.
No. You have to start with a pretty harsh reality check about what you actually understand. The curriculum calls this Rule Zero, which is basically about defining your circle of competence.
Yeah, and Warren Buffett famously coined that term, the circle of competence. But as the source material points out, it is widely, almost dangerously misunderstood by retail investors.
Okay, so the classic trap here, this is the Peter Lynch supermarket thesis, right?
Oh, yeah, the classic trap.
Because people read Lynch's advice to buy what, you know, and they think, well, I buy bulk paper towels at Costco every Sunday.
Right.
And I see a long line at the checkout register, so therefore, I understand this business and I should buy the stock.
Which is just, it's so flawed. Just because you shop at Costco does not mean you have the faintest clue about their, you know, supply chain economics.
Or their real estate acquisition strategy.
Exactly. Or how a 1% change in membership churn impacts their bottom line. There is this massive gulf between a consumer experience and actual business mechanics.
Right. Being a consumer does not give you an analytical edge.
Not at all. So to actually map out your true circle of competence, the text gives you four really specific mapping questions. The first one is about direct interaction.
Okay, like what industries you work in?
Yeah, what do you directly interact with as a customer, an employee, or like a really deeply embedded observer? And we're not talking about casually reading a tech blog about new AI chips.
Right.
We mean, say you work in enterprise healthcare, right? So you see firsthand exactly how a hospital purchasing committee makes a six-figure software decision.
That makes sense. And the second question naturally follows that, which is, for those specific industries, what do you know that a generalist analyst sitting in some high-rise in Manhattan probably doesn't know?
Right, exactly.
Like, if you work in construction management, you know that a delay in concrete sourcing can halt a project for 3 months. But an analyst might just look at a spreadsheet and assume, like, linear revenue growth.
Exactly. You have to locate that specific informational edge. And if your answer to that second question is nothing,
Then it's outside your circle.
yep, move on. The third question probes your natural curiosity. Like, what do you track for fun?
Oh, I like this one.
It's crucial because voluntary attention is incredibly sustainable. If you naturally find yourself like reading logistics supply chain reports on a Saturday morning because you genuinely love global shipping
Which
mechanics,
is a very specific hobby, but hey.
right. But if that's you, that's a massive clue to where your competence lies. You will always outwork someone who's only reading those reports because their boss told them to.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the fourth, which is probably the most revealing question. Where have you been wrong before, and do you know exactly why?
Because a circle of competence isn't a circle of omniscience. You are going to be wrong.
Exactly.
But if you lost money on, say, a semiconductor stock 3 years ago, and your explanation is just, well, the market was acting
If
crazy.
you're operating completely blind.
Right. You have to know the mechanism of your failure. Did you misjudge the inventory cycle? Did you underestimate a competitor's pricing power? You have to know.
Yeah, so armed with the answers to those four questions, the setup for this workshop requires you to select three publicly traded companies.
Okay.
They need at least 3 years of public history, so there's actual data to analyze. They have to be in three entirely different sectors.
To stop you from making a macro bet on just one industry, right?
Exactly. And there is a hard rule here. Absolutely no meme stocks.
Oh man, the meme stocks.
Ugh.
That restriction is absolutely vital to the integrity of this whole workflow, isn't it?
It really is. This is fundamentally about behavioral finance. If your relationship with a company is emotional or, tribal.
Like if your online identity is totally wrapped up in whether a specific ticker symbol goes to the moon.
Right. Or if you spend your evenings arguing with short sellers on Reddit or wherever, you just cannot objectively analyze that asset.
Because the moment the AI agent spots a flaw in the business, your brain just interprets it as a personal attack.
Exactly. Cognitive dissonance kicks in.
You won't look at the decline in gross margins and say, pricing power is eroding. You'll say, the AI doesn't understand the movement.
Yeah, you spend all your energy rationalizing instead of analyzing, which completely defeats the purpose of having a rigorous framework in the first place.
Okay, so you have your three unemotional circle of competence companies. Now you need to feed the AI raw financial data. But this introduces a massive vulnerability in the workflow.
It does.
The curriculum insists that you must manually spot check the AI's data against the actual SEC EDGAR filings before you do any analysis. And I have to push back on this step, or at least play devil's advocate for a second.
Go for it.
If the entire value proposition of an AI agent is that it saves me time and it acts as this tireless computational engine, why on earth am I pulling up manual 10K filings to verify its work?
I know, I know.
It feels like buying a calculator and then doing long division on scratch paper just to make sure the calculator's right.
It totally feels counterintuitive. But
Yeah.
you have to understand the underlying mechanism of how AI actually retrieves financial data. AI agents don't inherently know a company's revenue.
Right, they have to pull it from somewhere.
Yeah, they use APIs to pull data from aggregator sources, and those aggregators are notoriously messy.
Ah, okay.
Some aggregators round their numbers differently. Others really struggle with companies that have non-standard fiscal years, like Apple's fiscal year ends in September, not December.
Oh, right. So if the AI pulls a trailing 12-month figure from an aggregator that shifted the calendar dates, the numbers are just going to be skewed.
Exactly. So you have to calibrate your trust. If you pull up the SEC filing and see a 2% variance from what the AI reported, you can write that off as a rounding error or just a slight difference in how an accounting chart was categorized.
But if you see a 15% variance,
That is an alarm bell. That means the AI hallucinated, or it pulled the wrong year entirely, or it confused operating income with net income.
And a wrong number at this stage just breaks the entire pipeline.
Completely breaks it. If you have a garbage revenue number in the data verification stage, that translates into a garbage margin trend in the analysis stage.
Which then gives you a completely fictional valuation at the end.
Right. You cannot build a durable investment thesis on a cracked foundation.
So you do the manual labor, you verify the foundation, and once you know the numbers are real, you use the AI to process that data through what the curriculum calls the three lenses.
Yeah, this is where the machine does the heavy lifting.
Right. So the first lens is the income statement, which gives you the business structure. You have the AI trend out gross margins and operating margins over, say, a 5 to 10 year period.
Tracking the gap between gross and operating margins over time tells you an enormous amount about management's discipline.
How so?
Well, if a company's gross margins are expanding, meaning it costs them less to produce their core product, but their operating margins are completely flat, what is happening there?
Money's going somewhere else.
Exactly. Yeah. It means management is taking all that extra gross profit and basically setting it on fire by bloating the corporate overhead or dumping it into unproductive research and development.
You know, my personal favorite hidden cost to hunt for in the income statement is stock-based compensation.
SBC.
It is so easy to ignore because it doesn't show up as cash leaving the bank account, but it is a very real cost.
It's incredibly relevant, especially for modern tech companies. Mm. Stock-based compensation is a real cost because of the mechanism of dilution. If a company generates $100 million in revenue, but they are issuing millions of new shares to pay their engineers, the company's overall pie might be growing, but your specific slice of that pie is constantly shrinking.
And the AI needs to factor that dilution into the actual profitability of the business.
It has to.
Okay, so lens two shifts from profitability to survival. The balance sheet. This is the lens of fragility. And the source material specifically points to the Enron scandal here, which is like a masterclass in why you cannot just skim top-line numbers.
Oh, Enron is the perfect example because their main balance sheet looked totally manageable to casual observers.
Right, but that's because of the mechanism they use to hide the debt. They use these things called special purpose entities or SPEs.
Yeah, essentially off-balance sheet shell companies.
Exactly. They would transfer underperforming assets and massive amounts of debt into these external partnerships. So the parent company's debt-to-equity ratio looked pristine.
But the catch was that Enron was still legally guaranteeing that debt.
Right. So when the assets in the SPEs failed, billions of dollars of hidden liabilities suddenly crashed back onto the main balance sheet and just instantly bankrupted the company.
And that is exactly why you have to instruct your AI to aggressively scan the tiny footnotes of modern SEC filings. You're looking for the modern equivalents of those SPEs.
Like contingent liabilities or operating leases that aren't fully capitalized. Anything that could act as a hidden trapdoor.
Exactly. You also use the balance sheet lens to check the maturity wall.
A maturity wall.
Yeah.
This is the exact timeline of when a company's debt comes due, right?
Yeah, this dictates their vulnerability to interest rates. Like if you have a company with $10 billion in debt, but the maturity wall isn't until 2035, they have a decade to figure it out.
But if that $10 billion matures next year.
And interest rates have skyrocketed since they originally borrowed the money, they are going to have to refinance that debt at a punishingly high cost.
Which could wipe out their earnings basically overnight. Which perfectly sets up lens three. The cash flow statement. If the income statement is the story management wants to tell, the cash flow statement is the lie detector.
It is the ultimate ground truth.
Yeah.
I mean, management can use perfectly legal accounting adjustments to tell this beautiful story about earnings per share on the income statement.
Right.
But you cannot fake cash entering or leaving a bank account.
Right. The money is either there or it isn't.
Exactly. Does the actual operating cash flow match those rosy earnings? If a company reports record profits, but their cash flow is negative because all their capital is tied up in unsold inventory sitting in some warehouse.
The business is bleeding.
It's bleeding heavily.
Okay, so you synthesize all three of these lenses, income, balance sheet, and cash flow, into just three sentences for each of your companies.
Just three sentences?
Yes. You force the AI to identify the pattern, which is the overarching story the numbers are telling, and the uncertainty, which is the single biggest variable you still don't fully understand.
And identifying that uncertainty transitions you directly into the valuation phase. Now that you know what the business fundamentally looks like, you have to figure out what price the market is assigning to that business.
And this is where the framework gets really interesting to me. Because a lot of retail investors view valuation as this super rigid, objective math equation.
Oh, completely.
They think you punch the EPS into a formula and the calculator spits out the exact intrinsic value of the stock. But looking at this curriculum, valuation is framed much more like a choose-your-own-adventure novel. It's a story told in numbers.
It really is. Every single input in a valuation model is a narrative choice about the future. And this is where the human AI dynamic is just fascinating.
Right.
Because if you just ask an AI agent, hey, build me a valuation model for this company, it's going to default to the consensus story.
Right. It just aggregates what the rest of Wall Street analysts already believe.
Yeah. It builds a model based on average expectations.
So to generate any real insight, your job is to change the narrative. You have to figure out where you disagree with the crowd.
First, you orient yourself using simple multiples, like a price-to-earnings ratio.
The P-E ratio, right?
Right. If your company is trading at a P-E of 50 and its competitors are trading at a P-E of 15, the market is pricing in a story of absolute perfection. They're assuming massive uninterrupted growth.
Okay, so once you understand that baseline expectation, you have the AI build a discounted cash flow or DCF model.
Right. A DCF model projects the future cash flows of a business and discounts them back to what they're worth in today's dollars. But the crucial step here, the mandatory human intervention, is that you do not accept the AI's default DCF.
You have to force the AI to run the model again. But this time you inject your specific findings from the three lenses.
Exactly. Let's say the AI's default model assumes gross margins will expand by 2% every year forever, just because that's what management promised on the latest earnings call.
But your manual analysis of the income statement showed three consecutive years of margin compression.
Right. So you instruct the AI, run the DCF again, but assume margins continue to compress at their current historical rate.
And the gap between the AI's consensus valuation and your adjusted narrative valuation, that is the exact measure of your disagreement with the market.
Yes. And to truly understand the mechanics of that disagreement, you execute a sensitivity analysis,
which might be the most powerful prompt in the entire valuation workflow.
I think so, yeah. You basically ask the AI, which single assumption in this model, if changed by 20%, swings the final valuation the most?
I love that because it strips away all the noise. Like, let's say you're looking at a fast-growing software company. You think you're betting on their new AI product launch.
Okay.
But you run the sensitivity analysis.
Yeah.
And you realize that tweaking the terminal growth rate, which is, you know, the estimated growth of the company into perpetuity, decades from now, just by a fraction of a percent, causes the valuation to swing by 40%.
Oh, wow.
It reveals that you aren't actually betting on a product launch at all. You are betting heavily on a mathematical guess about the distant future.
It really forces intellectual honesty. So by this point in the workflow, you have a solid thesis, you have verified data, and you have a narrative valuation that you actually believe in.
You've built a beautiful sandcastle.
You have.
Yep.
And the next step is the most psychologically unpleasant part of the entire capstone.
You have to actively try to destroy your own idea.
You do.
The premortem and the red team. Let's talk about the 2030 premortem. The prompt here is wild. You tell the AI, it is the year 2030. I invested heavily in this company and I have lost 60% of my money. Write the financial postmortem explaining exactly how this disaster happened.
Yeah.
Why do we use such a brutal framing?
Because human psychology naturally drifts toward confirmation bias. By the time you've spent hours analyzing a company, you really want it to be a good investment.
You get emotionally attached to the thesis.
I do. Attacking it feels unnatural. So the 2030 premortem forces your brain to vividly confront plausible failure scenarios that you would otherwise just ignore. It demands you assess four specific vectors of risk: drawdown, fat tail, correlation, and liquidity.
Okay, let's break those down. Fat tail risk is the rare catastrophic stuff, like a massive accounting fraud or an overnight regulatory ban that wipes out their core product.
Right.
Correlation risk is an illusion of safety. You might think you're diversified because you own a tech company, a bank, and a home builder. But if interest rates spike to 10%, all three of those businesses get crushed simultaneously.
Exactly. But drawdown risk. This is the one that connects to what the curriculum calls the sleep test.
Yes, the sleep test.
This
is heavily inspired by Howard Marks' philosophy on risk, right?
Yeah. Marks argues that risk isn't just the mathematical probability of a temporary drop in price. True risk is the probability of a loss that you mathematically or psychologically cannot afford.
So if that 20-30 pre-mortem downside scenario makes your stomach drop and keeps you awake at night, it doesn't necessarily mean the stock is toxic.
No, it means your proposed position size is completely wrong. If the worst case scenario makes you sweat, you are essentially guaranteeing that you will panic sell at the absolute bottom of a market crash.
Precisely. So if a position survives the sleep test, you move to the red team phase. You write down your formal thesis. And not an AI summary, but your own words.
Your own words, yeah.
You detail the catalyst, you know, why this stock will move now. You define the moat protecting the business. You evaluate the management. You state your valuation frame and your time horizon. And crucially, you establish your kill switches.
I love the concept of kill switches.
Me too. A kill switch is a preloaded decision. It is a specific observable condition under which you will immediately abandon the investment. No questions asked.
Right.
Like, if the macro economy gets worse, is not a kill switch. That's too vague.
Way too vague.
But if gross margins drop below 30% for two consecutive quarters, I am selling immediately because my entire thesis relies on their pricing power. That is a kill switch. It removes emotion from the exit strategy.
Totally. So you take that comprehensive written thesis and you feed it back into the AI, but you give the AI a very aggressive persona prompt.
Well, this is fun.
You tell it to act as a ruthless, adversarial short seller. You tell it to attack the logic, find the holes in the data, and do not be polite.
You essentially spar with the machine, you read the AI's attacks, and you have to be radically honest. Did that punch land?
Right. Did it point out a real flaw in your logic regarding their debt load?
And if it did, you have to revise your thesis to account for that weakness, and you send it back into the ring. You iterate, you rewrite and reprompt until the AI's attacks start missing entirely. Or it just resorts to generic macroeconomic complaints that apply to every stock.
The AI toughens up the thesis. It acts as an incredible sparring partner. But that brings us to the final hurdle.
The bottleneck.
The bottleneck. The AI has gathered the data, built the models, and stress-tested your thesis. Now, you must make the final decision. And the absolute strictest rule of this final phase is no agents allowed.
You literally have to pull the plug on the machine at the finish line. Why ban the AI when it's been so incredibly helpful up to this exact moment?
Because if you let the AI make the final recommendation, like if you ask it, should I buy this? You are operating on borrowed conviction.
Borrowed conviction.
Yes. And borrowed conviction evaporates the minute the market opens and the stock drops 20%.
Wow. Huh.
When real money is on the line and the financial news is screaming that the sky is falling, you cannot hold a position just because a language model told you it was a good idea. You won't have the psychological fortitude. You must answer 5 questions completely alone to forge your own conviction.
Let's talk through that crucible of questions. First, you have to sit quietly and ask yourself, do I actually believe my own thesis? Not just the spreadsheet math, but my fundamental gut feeling about the reality of the business.
Second, is the upside actually sufficient to justify the specific risks I uncovered in the premortem?
Right. Third, what is the strongest remaining attack against this thesis? And am I truly comfortable accepting that vulnerability?
Fourth, does this pass the sleep test at my specific portfolio sizing?
And the final question, which is the ultimate test of ownership.
Mm.
Can I comfortably explain this investment thesis to a highly skeptical, highly intelligent friend?
That is such a good test.
If you find yourself relying on complex financial jargon, or you get defensive when they ask a simple question about the balance sheet, you don't actually own the idea yet.
Exactly. So based on those answers, you made your call. Buy one, skip all 3, or revisit later. And you compile the entire journey into a formal V1.0 memo.
That memo is the physical artifact of your judgment. It contains your verified data, the narrative valuation, the red team attacks, the explicit kill switches, and a strict future review date.
And when we zoom out and look at this entire AI native investor framework, it really offers a profound perspective on where computation actually adds value.
Right.
For gathering data and complex multivariable modeling, the AI's value is infinite. For adversarial red teaming, its value is extremely high. But for the final decision, its value is absolute zero.
The core loop of investing, understanding the mechanics of a business, valuing it honestly, assessing your personal risk tolerance, and holding yourself accountable, that loop hasn't changed a single bit since Warren Buffett was reading physical annual reports 7 decades ago.
Yeah, not at all.
AI just accelerates the mechanical half of that loop.
Yeah.
It gives you a scale and speed that previous generations couldn't even fathom.
But the discipline, the self-awareness, the willingness to look at a great company and say, you know, the valuation is too high, so I will skip it. that is entirely on your shoulders. And that is the part of you that actually compounds over time.
Yeah.
The true compound interest of this workflow isn't just your financial returns. I mean, financial returns will always involve a degree of market luck.
Of course.
The real compound interest is the documented, highly rigorous evolution of your own judgment. Every time that memo review date hits, you open your V1.0 thesis and you compare your written predictions against reality. That feedback loop is how you calibrate your mind.
This capstone is not just a one-off academic exercise. It is a repeatable, highly durable workflow for navigating a world that is just absolutely overflowing with information and noise.
Completely agree.
And that leaves us with a final provocative thought for you to consider. Think about this. If this rigorous AI-assisted framework, the strict data verification, the narrative valuation, the brutal 2030 pre-mortem, and the adversarial red teaming, if this system forces you to confront your inherent biases and perfectly codify your reasoning in the realm of investing, what else could it transform?
Oh, that's a great question.
Think about the other major high-stakes decisions in your life, changing careers, buying a house, deciding to start a new business. What if you mapped your true circle of competence before switching industries?
Yeah, or ran a 2030 financial pre-mortem on a massive mortgage.
Exactly. What if you had an AI brutally red team your startup business plan before you quit your day job? At the end of the day, you have an entire army of tireless analysts ready to stress test your life's biggest choices. But the beautiful, terrifying truth remains. When the analysis is done and the models are built, they will all go quiet, turn to you, and wait. The final call is always yours.